This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Live your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. I'm Poonam Verma. We're talking dreams. What dreams have you had? Because we'll be analysing them with our dream expert. We're also talking food, my favourite subject. We catch up with Angelica Torres of Let's Eat Kitchen and also Chef Kelvin Kelly. And I always love a good hug. How important is a hug for you? We find out. And we're talking veganism.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, we're going to get on to a really cool subject. I told some of my friends this was happening and they all started texting me their dreams. Right now, I am joined by the lovely Dr. Jana Khalifa. How are you, Dr. Jana?
I'm good, Poonam. How are you?
Now, you are a spiritual psychologist. Anything with the word spiritual in front of it, I get very excited because I'm actually a trained metaphysics practitioner, which is also very spiritual. So what is a spiritual psychologist?
Well, a spiritual psychologist is a psychologist that has simply integrated the soul into the body-mind equation. So mostly psychologists focus on the mind, but a spiritual psychologist also integrates the soul and existentialism, which basically means why are you here, into the equation of psychotherapy.
I love everything about what you just said. I'm so into that. I have a page called Soul Traveler because I truly believe so much is all about the soul's journey. So let's break this down. We've had a lot of people texting already. You can text us on 4001 and you can get your dreams analyzed, see what they mean, what Dr. Jana has to say to them. First of all, why do we dream?
So the reason we dream is because at night, our soul actually departs from our body. And I'm not trying to sound scary. I'm trying to sound very scientific. We rest. We go into our mode of rest, into our mode of recharge. And when that happens, our soul gets in touch with everything, with the infinity of life, with beyond time and space. And it catches messages for us. It catches our hopes. It catches our dreams. It catches our true self. And by thus, we are able to, when our soul returns, our mind redeciphers this in images, which are seen as dreams. So basically, it's like a program. You're seeing your movie. So it's lovely. And I want to share something. I just wanted to share something with you. The other night, I had a dream that I was getting married to Prince Harry.
Hang on.
And
is this your dream? Is this your dream?
Yeah, okay. I had a dream that I got married to Prince Harry. And I thought, wow. And I woke up and I felt so good. And this is one of the things. Dreams are meant to make you feel good. So some dreams are like, you know, mystical. Some are scary. But some are just literally just a little bit to uplift you and give you that vibe of love. And, you know, so anyone who's listening now to Dubai Eye, and even if you don't share your dream with us, just reflect on that wonderful dream that you once had, which was, you know, fulfillment of your wish. And that's really the power of dreams, that they make you live something that you possibly wouldn't have lived in real life.
I don't
like
think
Mary Harry.
I don't think Meghan Markle wouldn't be happy with that dream. All right.
Well, it's just a dream. It's just a dream.
So let me tell you about my experience. When I dream like I'm in a Mission Impossible feature length movie. There are like hundreds of people in it. There are different sequences throughout the movie. It feels like a movie. I'm doing extreme activities. I could be in a water park. I could be running, and every person changes. And I wake up thinking, what was that even about? Is that someone's mind just going too fast during the day?
So it could be, potentially it could be, but it's also your mind actually assimilating all the experiences that you're going through. And probably you live a fast-paced life. So your mind is showing you that you're living a fast-paced life where everything is possible. So I'd probably say you have a positive outlook on life.
I do.
Anything in your dream where, you know, where anything is possible, it's an indication that your mind is optimizing on that positivity, on that positive thinking attribute.
No, that's good to know then. I am very positive. Now, we have a caller. She has a question for you. Hello, Tammy. How are you?
Hi. Hello. And hello, doctor. This is Tammy speaking.
So what would you like to ask her?
Okay. So, just a very brief dream that I had, but I had it two consecutive nights in a row. And it happened about 2 or 3 months back, and I've been really wanting to understand what the dream was. The dream was about palm trees, and a lot of them.
Palm trees?
Yes, and it was like a forest of palm trees, and it felt like it was right in front of my eyes. And it just was so much greenery. And it happened. It was two nights that it happened, and I've never dreamt about it before. So I don't know if there's any significance for it.
So palm trees are an indication of strength, right? Palm trees are very strong. They're very durable, and they live in tough conditions. So perhaps looking at palm trees just in your dream, and you're standing on the side, or perhaps even if you are in the forest, right, is an indication that you feel like you are standing still in a place where it's a little bit tough for you. But the fact that the palm trees are green and palm trees are fruit yielding, it's an indication that this situation that you think is tough is actually very therapeutic. It's very healing for you, because the color green is always healing. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel happy. So it's an indication that where you are is actually at the right place. And if you say this was a reoccurring dream, it means that your mind was trying to give you, and your soul was trying to give you, a message that you're actually at the right place. That perhaps you want to move, or you want to do something, but actually your mind is telling you, you just need to be steadfast. You need to be resilient and just hold in that space, in that place that you find yourself in.
Does that resonate with you, Tammy?
Yeah, definitely. Just to say, it was pine trees, P-I-N-E, not palm trees.
Oh, I thought you said palm trees as well.
Pine.
Yes. So I don't know.
So as long as the trees are green, then you're good, right? The pine trees have a little bit of a other meaning, because pine trees are known to live high in the mountains. So I don't know where you are currently located, but perhaps if the forest is also far from you, it's an indication that perhaps, you know, you need to move somewhere closer to a place where it's more suitable for your environment. Because the pine tree itself cannot live in tougher situations like the palm tree. The palm tree is more resilient.
Tammy, have you thought about you wanting to move in any way?
No, yeah, I mean, definitely. We've been thinking about it. So maybe it has some reference to that.
Okay.
Are you moving to a place where it grows pine trees?
Well, but there's nothing particular that we're actually looking at. I mean, we're looking at options, but there's nothing specific that we're looking at. So, maybe it could be towards something more, you know, greenery or foresty or farm-like land. I don't know.
So you want to be around nature in some capacity?
No.
Oh.
Thank you so much, Doctor. I will definitely look more into it. It was a very interesting dream. Never had it before. And, I guess I just wanted to just speak to someone that had more insight.
Thank you so much, Tammy, for that. Sorry, you can call us, text us on 4001 if you want to ask Dr. Jana. Jana, go ahead.
I was going to say that pine trees are very significant in their dreams, because they don't like to move around. They're more about nature, and they like to have their surroundings as they are. So it's an indication that in her dream, when you dream of something, perhaps it's a sign showing you that what your nature internally, what you want to do. So perhaps moving to a place where you are more comfortable with your environment is the right step for you. So as you're saying that you don't know exactly where you want to go, then maybe these are the steps, like three steps. Just list, what are you comfortable with? What is the kind of environment you want to live in? And choose your place of relocation according to that, possible.
I've had a text, and she says, I don't dream. I don't have any dreams. And I don't remember them. Is that an issue?
So that's very common. People say that a lot. But actually, in truth, is everybody dreams. We just don't remember our dreams, right? That's the essence. We don't remember our dreams. And The reason is because we're tired. We go to bed, we're tired. We wake up to an alarm clock, right? It's a quick waking up. So this is potentially the reason why we don't remember our dreams. So let's begin with some practices that you can do for the next 3-4 days that can get you dreaming like instantly, right? Throughout the day, while you're walking, just very simply say, am I dreaming? Just close your eyes and just say, am I dreaming? And then you will find that throughout the night, your dreams are now more enhanced. They're of better quality. Another thing is try not to wake up to an alarm clock. I know that's difficult with today, especially if we work, but try to set your alarm clock to give yourself at least 15 to 20 minutes snooze where you can drift back to sleep and recollect those dreams. And the third aspect is journaling. Journaling really nails it. If you make a commitment, I'm going to start dreaming, and you begin to write even on your phone, on the notepad, in a notebook, whatever, right? If you begin to take note of your dreams, you'll find that you very quickly begin to dream. And that can take literally 3 days practice to a week, nothing more.
Okay, thank you for those tips. What doesn't kill
you makes you stronger. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Oh, such a good subject. We're talking to spiritual psychologist Dr. Jana Khalifa about analysing our dreams. Now, Dr. Jana, I've had dreams that have literally come true, the exact scenario. And I'll give you an example. I hadn't seen a friend for 6 months and I dreamt that she had scratches all over her body. I woke up thinking, oh, my dreams again. Text her just saying, hope you're well. And an hour later, she sent me a text and she was in the doctor's waiting room and all of her arms were scratched because she had an allergy. That was just one out of four that came true. What does that mean? Am I crazy?
First of all, let me just say something. The idea that the future and our past is in the now is actually becoming more and more prominent. And you would know this because, you know, you're into metaphysics.
Yes.
So you would know that the future is actually now. And some of us truly, with the power of our mind, can access these stages and the future, right? They literally, there are people who can see into the future. And it's not fortune telling, and it's not something, you know, ooh, scary. It's literally some of us, just like we can smell and see and hear, some of us have that ability to a little bit transcend time and go into the future. And it's most easily done in dreams, because when we're sleeping, our ego and our mind and our logical mind is relaxed. And by thus, you're able to see into the future beyond time and space. So absolutely, you're not crazy. And most of the time, if you give yourself the confidence to trust in what you see, even if it doesn't happen in exactly the same symbols, you will begin to see that you're very guided with your dreams. You're very attuned with your dreams, and they can literally show you areas of sustenance. They can show you areas in which you can improve your love life, in which you can improve your, you know, your relationships, even your career. So don't ever doubt your dreams or get afraid of what you see in your dreams. It's just literally your soul that is connecting to everything that's beyond time and space. It's oneness.
Okay.
It's, you know,
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
So a lot of people dream this. I've had it too, where you're screaming, but the voice isn't coming out and you're scared, but no one can hear you in the dream.
That's a common dream as well. And that's usually because we don't express ourselves. So we are not in our daily life. When we are awake, we act according to what society or our work dictates to us. And by thus, there's a lot of our internal truth that is silenced. And when your internal truth is silenced, Punai, it has to come out somehow. So in the dream, we dream that we're screaming, but the voice is not coming out because what we're hiding is still very internal.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. So Rob said, my wife Alina has so many vivid dreams. She recently saw three colorful snakes in our house. She caught one and put it in a bag. The other one she caught, but it shed its skin. And the third snake just slithered away. What does it mean when you dream about snakes?
So snakes is a very controversial animal in dreams. Because to some, it actually means medication. If we notice pharmacies and medicine has the, you know, the snake symbol. And it also, we, you know, everybody has the notion of Adam and Eve and the snake and the story of the snake. So every time we have a not so positive connotation to snakes, and some people think of it in the medicinal terms, but mostly as universally today, a snake is agreed upon to be a bearer of a cure, right? A bearer of a cure. It's healing. So if you see three colorful snakes, and especially depending on the color. So for example, if it is a blue, it means it's something related to your thyroid. It's related to your blue organs, to your neck. For example, if it's green or pink, it's related to your heart. If it's more, if the snakes are more orange or red, then again, you can look this up. It's just basically the chakras. So the chakras. As you're saying, it's the, yeah, so exactly. It's if you look at the colors of the chakras, right, it's directly representation of that in accordance to the snake. So the snake is trying to heal or show your wife that there are aspects in her life or in your family's life that needs healing. And these are usually related to the color of the snake equation.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that you were related to the chakras. Okay. What about people who keep dreaming the same dream for years and years and years?
Get the message.
This message came on Facebook. And if you keep dreaming the same dream, get the message. Pay attention. That's what Dr. Jana says. I love that answer.
Get the message, right? It's something knocking at your door. It's a gift. Pay attention.
Pay attention.
If you don't sit there, looking at yourself and, you know, thinking what is your life and what are your dreams about and what are your aspirations, then your mind is going to keep doing the same thing until you pay attention.
Now, Jackie's text, and she says she keeps dreaming. She says it might sound like a cliche, but she has dreams about her ex-partner, but he lives in another country. And she goes, it feels so real, like he's about to call me. She goes, are our souls connected despite the distance? Because people do dream of people who they've been with or they've been married to, and they do pop into the dreams. What does that mean?
So we are connected to our partners up to 7 years, right? So
wow.
Any person that we've actually been in contact with physically or we've loved or we've cared about, we have a psychic connection to them. And so much of our relationships is unfinished business, right?
Totally.
Even if you think that, right? Even if you think, okay, I'm done with that, I'm through with that, I've given up on that, I'm healed. Whatever, there are still segments there that you're just thinking, but what if? But what if I tried harder? What if, what would have happened? Or what if, you know, I healed better? So the aspect of dreaming about exes, whether it's a man or a woman, is very common. And it's an indication that there is still something, not about the person, but about yourself that you're looking to complete. So that's one thing. And it's common because also, even if the person himself hasn't completed his journey and thinks about you, you pick up on that. So there's both these things weigh in dreams. And the only way to know is to check in and say, am I the one that's incomplete and, you know, asking more from a relationship now? Or is the person, or are you really, you've totally forgotten about him and you're picking up on his thoughts?
Amazing. So, I know. It's all about connection. It's all about energy, no matter how far the distance is.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Spoon and Verma with you till 5 p.m. Filling in for Helen. We're talking about dreams and we're analysing them. And I have the lovely spiritual psychologist with me, Dr. Jana Khalifa, on. So, Dr. Jana, we've had a text saying that I keep dreaming about spiders. I'm quite a creative person, but does spiders, are they connected to stress and worries? Because that's what she's read.
So again, spiders, like snakes, they have many meanings, but no, actually spiders are not related to stress or worry or anything that's fearful or scary. Actually, spiders are someone who is able to multitask. So if you're someone who's able to multitask, then perhaps you view yourself as a spider because, you know, they have a lot of legs and hands or whatever you want to call them. And, you know, they crawl and they can crawl in multiple directions. So they're very, very fast. They're very efficient. So a spider is a representation of someone who's durable and who can multitask. Now, if you don't multitask, this is an invitation to multitask. And if you're a multitasker, then it's embrace your multitasking.
Well, it may also be that she's good at knitting because they do great, beautiful little webs, don't they? She needs to take up knitting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Mira. Okay, so another text says, I dreamt that a UFO was above me and my friends. And everyone was excited saying, yeah, let's go in the spaceship. But I was terrified. What do UFO dreams mean?
All right. So what does aliens represent to us? And to most of us, I mean, myself included, I think of aliens as something foreign, something strange, something new, something exciting, something unknown, right? So if all your friends are up for going up on an alien spaceship and you're not, then perhaps take a look at your character and realize that you're not someone that likes to explore or go into, you know, new things, or that you're a bit fearful or holding back onto exploring something new, extraordinary, innovative in your life. So in this case, and if all your friends are jumping on the UFO and they're happy, so if your friends are happy, it's an indication that you should embrace that, and that, you know, maybe, you know, just push yourself a little bit and just, you know, come out of it and just, you know, just go for it. Go for something that excites you.
So just jump on that spaceship when you see it, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So another text. I haven't spoken to a friend for many, many months. And recently, I don't even know his family, but his parents have come into my dreams and they've been really lovely, happy, chatty, but I don't even know them and they don't know me. Is it because I'm not talking to my friend, or what is the reason?
Okay, so that's actually an interesting dream, that you're dreaming of the parents of your friend. And the question is, what about your parents? So where do you stand with your parents? And maybe if you get a response back, let me know. But the idea is that if you're dreaming of someone's parents, of your friend's parents, they're actually, it's about your parents. It's not anything to do with your friend who you're not speaking to. So take a reflection on your own parents. How do you treat them? Or if they're talking to you nicely. So see what the interaction was like. And that's an invitation to embrace the same kind of interaction with your own parents.
Okay.
Right? Most of us get along with our friend's parents, but not with our own parents. It's a phenomenon. So, you know, just take a look at what was the interaction with your friend's parents in the dream, and maybe take some of those communication skills and implement them with your own parents.
Amazing. Right. So we've had another one from Haley saying, I have a recurring dream where I always need to rush off somewhere and have to pack my stuff quickly, but I can't pack quick enough. And I always wake up really stressed.
All right. That's a good one. Catch up. You know, there is some things that you are doing that are slow in life. If you know, I wouldn't say slow, but maybe just a little bit, you could do them more efficiently. You could, you know, organize yourself more, or perhaps you can manage your time more efficiently. Anything in a dream that you're unable to accomplish and you wake up with that surge of energy that you know, what is stress? Because stress, most of us are scared from stress. We think, oh, stress is bad. I need to stay away from stress. But actually, stress is just something that's pushing against you, propelling you forward, saying, come on, get a move on, right? So the moment you're able to do that and realize that this dream is telling you, just, you know, manage your time a little bit better, get a move on, then, you know, everything seems to be fine, right? So if in your dream you're waking up from a state with an influx of stress energy, which is actually just energy, right, pushing you forward, then take that energy and do something about it, right? So just, you know, manage time.
Okay. So another text says, every 4 to 5 months, I get dreams of getting sucked into a dark vortex and I reach out my hand for someone to pull me out. And I also end up kind of howling during this situation, and it actually scares me. And they say it's a man. And he says it scares his wife as well because of the sound he's making.
Okay. So if he's able to do the sounds while he is sleeping, it means that this is a very deep sleep dream, meaning that, you know, the soul, the body and the mind are actually working together to assimilate this emotion. Mm. And so without going into it, too much into it online, but just perhaps this person should observe what is truly really sucking him in life, that something that he's really petrified from, something that is that he feels the clock is ticking on it, something that's truly, you know, draining him, and literally sit down and take notice of it. Because these are anything that's dark and whole and sucking us in, that's a sign that the mind is telling you there's something unpleasant here, and let's deal with it.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Spoon and Verma with you till 5 p.m. We're talking dreams and we're analysing them with Dr. Jana Khalifa today. Okay, so let's get to some more texts, Dr. Jana. Now, this one, I do feel sorry for this one. It's from Roger. He says he's in his mid-30s and he's semi-bald now. But in his dream, which he has quite a lot, he has a full head of hair and he feels it moving in the breeze. Isn't that cute?
That's so cute. Actually, hair represents wisdom. That's a really, 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 it's a really good dream. By the way, hair in any situation represents wisdom. It represents wisdom. It represents money. It represents prosperity.
Wow.
So all of those things are represented in hair. And the thicker, the bigger, the you know, the curlier, all of these things are signs of health, prosperity, and wisdom.
That's an amazing dream.
Yeah, absolutely. So whether, you know, whether it's in a dream or in real life, the more hair, you know, the better.
So a lot of people have dreams of falling. Mark Lloyd, our presenter here, he said he constantly has dreams where he's falling, whether it's off a mountain, off a bridge. And he also is terrified of driving over bridges in normal waking life as well. So what is that whole concept of falling? And why is it that we all dream about falling, but we never dream of the actual landing on the ground?
All right. So let me explain. I explained that at the beginning. When we are sleeping, or where we fall asleep, our soul kind of metaphysically, it's as if it rises up and it detaches a little bit from our body, not in a scary way, just detaches a little bit from our body and connects to this universal oneness. Mm. Now, when the soul returns, right, it feels like it's falling. It feels like it's ascending.
Yeah.
And sometimes the mind actually picks up on that and deciphers that kind of energy as if you're falling.
Yes.
But you're not really falling. And that's why you never hit anything, because it's, you know, it's smooth landing. So it's not related to the fear, Roger, of any way of like coming up, you know, of driving off a bridge or anything like that. Simply any dream, even the jitter when you do this, you know, like when you jitter out of your sleep, that's the same thing. It's literally just the soul, you know, reestablishing that firm connection to the body.
Oh, wow. I have that a lot as well. I know a lot of people have that. So we've got quite an interesting text. I keep having dreams about a paranormal character who sits at the end of my bed. And when I'm dreaming of this person, as they get closer, my partner has noticed I'm physically moving further up the bed during my sleep. And during this dream, I know that I'm dreaming. And in my dream, I'm really trying to find a way to wake myself up.
Wow.
I know.
All right.
Wow.
Yes. Well, you know, so any kind of entities or paranormal entities, there's no such thing as paranormal entities. There's like, you know, there's cats and dogs and plants and humans and, you know, there's multiple other species. And sometimes just because we didn't study them in a textbook at school does not mean that they don't exist. Maybe we just didn't study them, or maybe someone hasn't discovered them. And energy is everywhere. So you just have to think of whatever you define as a paranormal species, just another species that perhaps you're not so familiar with. And yes, potentially in your dreams, you can sense the energy of multiple beings around you that could potentially be, you know, plants. You can even sense, you know, when you're in nature, you feel good, you have good sleep, right? And when you're in the city, you have a little bit of more stressed sleep. It's the same thing. Don't be too scared from it. It is real, but it's not that it's something really scary or paranormal. And just embrace it, but accept that it is true. It is real. It's not something that you're imagining, or, you know, And the more you can accept that, the easier the interaction and the communication with all the energies or entities around you become, with all the species.
Oh, we could do this for 2 hours. There's so many texts coming in. Okay, so just one final one before we go to the news. I dreamt of four beautiful glittering rainbows, one on top of the other. And in the dream, it just felt like it was a miracle. And I kept looking for my phone to take a picture of this rainbow, the four rainbows. What does a rainbow represent in a dream? And what's the meaning of having four rainbows on top of each other?
All right, so that's a very mystical dream, and I love this dream, right? First of all, you need to know a rainbow is a promise, right? That's a promise. And it's so interesting because subconsciously, we know that wisdom is within. We know everything. There's nothing potentially anybody can teach us. Like, we truly are very connected beings. Yeah. And she used the word miracle because, interestingly enough, the first time a rainbow appeared in the world in the mystical sense was the promise of the miracle, the promise of being saved. So a rainbow in a dream is a representation of a promise. And because she used the word miracle, it is four miracles that are meant to happen in her life, or four promises that have come from, you know, from the mystical world or from the creator or whatever you want to call it, right? That are just being given to you, that are going to be miraculous in your life. And, you know, those are four elements that are very powerful that, you know, you can indulge in.
Okay, well, Dr. John, I'm going to have to end it, unfortunately. We'll have to do this again very soon. But I appreciate your knowledge, and I think it's amazing some of the things that you've shown us. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Punai, thank you so much. Dubai, I thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and I love being with you, and I love your viewers. They absolutely have the most amazing questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dubai.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai i103.8.
So, Zina, I want you to picture this. I think it's a normal weekend for you with your kids. You're in your PJs, the TV is on, you're stuck on the sofa, and you can't be bothered to cook. That means it's time to go on one of those delivery apps and order yourself something nice and quick. So what is your go-to delivery food? Not just for the family, but as in just for you. If it was just you, what would be your go-to?
Oh, my goodness. So I don't like pizza, but we always end up ordering pizza to please everybody. But if it were solely up to me, it would be, this is really bad, fried rice, chicken, what else? A nice hot soup.
A nice hot soup. We can guess what Milani's is. What is Milani's? What do you think?
Pile of candy, I think. No, honey loves her sweets and bread.
McDonald's and sweets, that's what she loves. I'm a woman, obviously, so mine is dependent on my mood. Now, we're talking about food delivery because the first hour is all about food. And joining me right now is the co-founder of Let's Eat, Angelica Torres. Hello, Angelica. Hello, Angelica.
Hello.
Don't worry, that's my fault. I'm such a bad techie person. Don't worry about it.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm very, very good. I like the name Let's Eat. I mean, that's the word I would use every single day. Let's just eat. Now, Let's Eat is a cloud kitchen. And that means that food brands set up and use your kitchen to make food for delivery. And am I right in saying these brands, they don't actually have a physical space, meaning an actual restaurant?
Yes, definitely. You are right. So it doesn't have a brick and mortar where people can come in and dine. Mm. It's basically 100% delivery only brands where we just deliver to your doorstep, wherever you are.
So I hear over that, especially since the pandemic, cloud kitchens are very big business. Is that true?
It's actually what happened during the pandemic. This is when it actually exploded, if I may say. For example,
yeah,
where,
you know, I heard about this. Yeah.
So it was for us at Let's Eat, if I can share my experience.
Yes, please do.
So it was just right before the pandemic, when we launched Let's Eat, and when the pandemic hit, that was when it exploded. And this was when we learned everything from, you know, the volume of orders, especially when we were all quarantined at home. And this is what people, you know, would do, is just to order. So this is where we saw the moment where, wow, there is actually a potential, especially in the delivery industry.
So how many different food brands work from your kitchen right now?
So for Let's Eat, we actually don't onboard brands. We have our own brands that we develop from scratch.
Right.
So right now we are on our 18th brand and growing. So by the end of August, we'll have 3 brands launched. That'll be 21 brands in total.
Okay, and how many?
Different cuisines.
How many people work? Sorry, how many different cuisines?
So we have about total of about 10 different cuisines.
Yeah.
So that comes up to about 18 brands now, which will reach 21 brands by the end of August.
And how many people are working in this kitchen?
So the total for Let's Eat, we have about 100 people, because we have outlets all over Dubai as well for our kitchen. So we have our central kitchen and 3 outlets across Dubai.
Is it working 24 hours a day?
As of now, no. It's between 12 to 12.
Yeah, because we're greedy in Dubai. We just think we can click a finger and order whenever we want. So that's the problem.
But that is in the works, though, because I'm sure there are people that would want to order, you know, in the middle of like early morning time.
Yeah.
So that's at work, like in the works.
Okay, so on average per day, how many deliveries do you have?
So on average per day across all our outlets, we are already reaching about 400 deliveries.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Before this, though, you also ventured into opening a restaurant called Mr. Crab. Now, I was doing my research. I checked it out, unfortunately, at lunchtime at 1 p.m. And I thought, oh, I'm hungry now. So tell me about Mr. Crab. I love seafood. What is it that you serve and where is it based if you wanted to visit it?
Yeah, so we serve seafood, fresh seafood. So the story of Mr. Crab goes how through my travels, I saw a concept in which I figured when I ate there, it was the whole experience from not only the food, but the whole show that it gives. For example, we spread, like in Mr. Crab, we spread a bucket of seafood with our in-house sauce called the Crabonanza that has Cajun sauce. And it's all about eating seafood, I think, is the right way, with your hands, you know, getting dirty, not having a care in the world about cracking your crabs open and peeling the shrimp and with family and friends.
So you're going to get messy, basically.
Yes.
So let me ask you a question. Is getting messy as a first date place for dining the right place to go, Mr. Crab?
To be honest, I've seen it with my own eyes, and I've seen them enjoy themselves.
Good.
So I do think it is a potential place.
That's, I can imagine it just being fun, actually, and that's what food should really be. Okay, so that's great. I need to check that out. I haven't come across Mr. Crab.
Yeah, we have 2 locations currently, one in Al Barsha, one next to Mall of the Emirates, and our second location is in Burjuman Mall.
Okay, nice. I will go to the Barsha one. That's close to me.
So perfect.
We're talking about, you know, if you're lazy at home, what is your go-to food that you would deliver?
For me, it's pasta.
I have a feeling with all this kitchen you're doing, Mr. Crab, you have a massive love for food, right? I'm assuming this.
Yes, I'm the biggest foodie there is. Because growing up,
yes,
because I come from a different cultural background. So the culture was totally different, but there was one thing that was definitely clear and that was so universal, is that it was the food that connected both cultures together.
So what culture are you from?
So my mother is from the Philippines and my dad's from Lebanon.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
I mean, both foodie cultures.
Yes, both foodie cultures. And I was fortunate enough to get exposed with traveling at a very young age.
Yeah.
So I saw that the universal language really is food. The connection between all cultures together is food. So I knew at a young age that I really wanted to get into the food and beverage industry.
And do you cook? Do you enjoy cooking yourself?
I enjoy cooking and I enjoy eating what I cook.
Oh, yeah. You see, I'm the same. I know so many people who A, don't know how to cook, or they're a bit lazy. But I feel that when you know, when you ask somebody, what's your favorite dish of all time, if you could only eat one dish, the majority of people say, it's my mom's this. Because when somebody cooks something with you with love, the energy goes in the food. Do you believe in that?
Definitely, 100%.
Exactly. Right, we are going to be talking about some latest food news. Do text us as well. We're going to be talking later on about dreams. We're going to be analyzing your dreams with a specialist. Oh, my goodness. Angelica, is there any dream that you want me to ask the expert that you have and you'd like to know the meaning for it?
A dream. Wow. For me, I've just had dreams of what have I been dreaming about? To be honest, I've been dreaming about
food.
What? Yeah. As you know, as my answer is so like you can tell, but it's really food. Like the dishes that we have and the so many dishes and cuisines that I've been trying, I'm actually dreaming about them. No joke.
Well, it's a good job in the dreams we can eat as much as we want, but we don't wake up fatter, I should say.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking. So we'll put that towards so when it comes to eating food. So we've got some food news. Let's just talk about one before we go to our break. You spotted this on social media, and basically there was an outrage after a restaurant posted a sign saying delivery drivers can't sit in the chairs. They're reserved for customers only. I totally agree with that. I have seen that happening. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so unfortunately, such situation did happen. But for us, especially in my establishments, I make sure that, you know, these drivers, they are the key pillars in the industry. And they are the ones that basically link our brands to our customers. And that is within our establishments, there's definitely a waiting area that we have with air condition. You know, if they needed their bottles to be refilled with water, to have water available for them anytime. And also for us right now, we are in the works of doing an initiative for them in which they are able to have coolers from any of our coolers across our brands that they can purchase at a very affordable price for them that could not only be water, but as well as other drinks that they could try while they're, you know, at work, because they work most of the day and it's not an easy job for them.
No, it's not. I agree with you.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Poonam Verma with you till 5 p.m. Now we're talking foodie for the first hour, and I'm always hungry. And so is Angelica Torres. She's joining me from Let's Eat. So let's go to the next story, Angelica. We're discussing that there seems to be an abundance of live performances with your dining experience. What do you think about that?
I think it's honestly an excellent experience for everyone to actually go and see how, you know, for example, for me being such a big foodie, going to such places not only uses my sense of taste, but it activates all my senses together. And at the same time, the more your senses are used, whether it's taste, food, smell, or touch, or sound, it and emphasizes the experience to a different level even more. And
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. At the same time, just coming out, you know, transitioning into what the situation that we've been to, the knowing that we're going into a place that is safe and regulated environment just makes it even better.
Now, I know, like, if you think about it, you go for a dinner, you get entertainment, you're getting more for your money. That's really, and it's a different kind of night out.
100%.
And it's great for the entertainers. They've been really badly hit. I'm just trying to think of it on the other side. Now, if I'm an entertainer, let's say if I was singing or dancing, I wouldn't want people eating. I want them to be focusing on what I'm doing, because when you're eating, you can still be chatting. You know what I mean? I feel like there's not a full focus. And I would rather eat and then watch something rather than do both at the same time. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think there's like a... not sort of a schedule, but I guess you could choose when you'd want to eat it. And then, I mean, when you go to a venue that you know there's entertainment, you'd want to eat first and socialize and then leave the end for the best, which is watching the entertainment live.
Yeah, what about, I mean, I've been doing this recently. I think it's because I'm getting old. I'll go to a restaurant and think, oh, it's so loud. I can't hear what the other person is saying to me. What about that? But then I suppose if you know there's entertainment, you need to expect that, right?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. So we're discussing some other apps which are pretty good, and these are for the better, and they're preventing food waste. And we're going to see if this something like this could work in the UAE. So let's get a few facts out here. One third of the world's food gets lost or wasted every year. And roughly 38% of the food prepared every day in the Emirate is wasted, which jumps to around 60% during Ramadan. I remember going to a restaurant once and there was so much bread left over. It was like a bakery. And I said to him after, what are you going to do with all this bread? And he said, I'm going to throw it away. I said, well, you need to give it out somewhere. And he said, no, we can't do that. So I love the fact that apps are being developed to help this. One is called Food for All, which is in the US. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Food for All, basically, for the apps, I think this is a great initiative for us all to, you know, to be educated from the business owner's point of view, as well as the people, in order to minimize the wastage of food. So whether it is, for example, for Food for All app, they either, by the end of the day, restaurant owners can show them or put a discount, 50% off or however number of discounts, to make sure that the food that they have won't go to waste and people can just go and pick the dishes that they want and pick it up from the, you know, from the restaurant. So I think definitely would be such a great initiative here for us to do it as well, which I know that there is the UAE Food Bank established in 2017, mm-hmm. which allows restaurants and hotels to give away their extra food instead of throwing it, because whether it's for free or, you know, at a discounted price, there's always one goal to achieve, and that's not to throw or waste any food. So I think it's something we could definitely look into here.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer that, you know, if I don't finish some food in a restaurant, I always pack it and take it with me. And I did that once, and the waiter said to me, I'm so happy you did that. He goes, some people just leave it. And in my country where I come from, he goes, we don't even have this much food. And when he said that, my heart broke, you know. I just think we waste so much. We take so much for granted. Also, I like this story. Might sound dodgy, it isn't dodgy, but it might sound it. There's another app called Olio, which is like Tinder for the overambitious home cook. Tell me about Olio.
So for the home cooks app, Olio, this is something that is, you know, for not just something commercial, but for people to actually at their own homes be able to show their skills and talent. So I think it's a great app as well to have.
Yeah, it's a good way of getting to know people, because I think you get to know your neighbors and stuff like that. Also, in Canada, they have something called Flash Food, which allows shoppers to receive discounts, right?
Mm-hmm. That's 100% true.
So what happens with this app? How does it work?
So what happens is it's the same sort of where the restaurant owners as well are able to do the same thing and to for their food not to go to waste, to put it on a flash discount for people around the area to be able to go and collect it themselves instead of throwing it out.
Yeah. So do you think these apps, I mean, these apps really need to work in every country, I do believe. Do you think it would work here, or do you know of any that are in development?
It would definitely work here. It is something that everyone in the food and beverage industry should consider, to come up with an app that can connect all restaurants in order to, you know, put whatever food that is going to go into wastage to put them on discount or to just give it away.
Yeah. And what about food mashups? What does that mean? I think it's happening here all the time in the UAE, apparently, but I don't know what it means.
Sorry, could you just clarify that again, please?
Food mashups. What are food mashups?
This is where people all over the UAE are able to give food that either they are either going to go to waste or not. So they're able to, you know, combine all the food that is needed, that is able to be distributed to people instead of throwing it.
Okay.
So it's like a communal, thing where instead of, you know, throwing out the certain dishes or certain products, they could put it as a communal where people can go in and collect the food.
Okay. So, Angelique, I think next time we have an interview, I think we need to do it at Mr. Crab so we can eat and talk at the same time.
100%. I'd love to have you over.
Amazing, Angelique. Thank you so much for joining me.
The Chef's Table.
Well, every Thursday, we like to shine a spotlight on a brilliant chef in the city. And today, I'm joined by Chef Kelvin Kelly. I thought he was Italian, but he did a fake accent on his Instagram page. Is that right, Chef Kelvin?
Hey, Poonam, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Absolutely. I tried my very best to give the best impersonation of an Italian guy, and I butchered it completely.
You did butcher it completely. Okay, are you touching your speaker or something? Because I can hear something.
Oh, sorry.
Keep still, Chef. I know you're a busy man and you like to keep busy in the kitchen. You need to stay still right now. Okay, so let's talk about you. You're head chef at One Life Kitchen in the Design District, is that right?
That is correct. Building 5, ground floor, right opposite the parking lot.
I've actually been there. I went there about a year ago. And I know I've been invited 2 weeks ago. And I've been a bit lazy, but I will definitely come. So tell me about One Life Kitchen.
You've got to get down there. Well, we've recently just had a revamp. Obviously, you saw the Italian impersonation launching our aperitivo menu, which is a bite-sized menu and basically a menu that derives from me taking our regular menu and just shrinking it right down to small bite-sized pieces, which goes really, really well with our newly launched licensed bar.
Okay. And I want to ask you a question. We're asking everybody right now, you know, when you're lazy, I mean, as a chef, do you get tired of cooking at home, by the way, or does it just come naturally to you?
I do. And unfortunately, when my wife now heard that I was studying to be a chef, she just gave up all inhibitions learning how to cook. So
Yeah. Basically,
it's just me in the house that cooks.
Oh.
But I do get tired and get home from work and not want to actually cook.
I think being a chef is so, I've interviewed so many chefs in their kitchens, and when I'm interviewing them, they're standing on their feet for ages. I actually get a stool sitting down waiting for them. I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah. And really, no one wants to bring their work home, but I guess we're forced to, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't marry a chef because I know they'd never cook for me at home. It's just so obvious.
Probably be a bunch of takeouts.
Yeah. So if you had to order your takeout, what would be your go-to takeout food?
My go-to takeout food would probably be pizza. It's just the easiest. It's just delicious. It's easy. You can be vertical on the couch and just go at it.
Where are you from, by the way?
I'm actually from South Africa.
I thought so. So, okay. Yeah. So what kind of food did you grow up eating in South Africa?
Well, I grew up eating I don't know if you've ever heard of the term braai.
No, I haven't. How do you spell that?
Okay. B-R-A-A-I.
No, I haven't.
So what braai is, it's basically a barbecue. So the Australians just adopted it from us and called it a barbecue.
Did they adopt it?
I like
it.
I'm not sure. They probably stole it. But if there's any Australians listening, they'd probably throwing something out the radio right now.
We won't tell any Australians where you work. Don't worry. Okay.
So it's a braai. We call it a braai, which is coals or actually wood. So it's a wood fire and you cook your meat directly on it. So that's what I grew up eating. And with something called pap.
Pap
is, it's an African staple. Uh-huh. We call it pap in South Africa, but the rest of the Africa call it, I think, Kenya, Nigeria, a couple of the northern northwestern African countries call it ugali. And
ugali.
It's basically, ugali.
Well, so it's, when you said pup, a pup in England is a puppy. So I was just trying to figure that out. So what is
it's
ugali?
It's not P-U-P, it's P-A-P. So
pap.
Pap. It's maize meal. So it's maize meal that's been ground down into a white powder form.
Yeah.
And then you cook it with water and it turns into a stiff, almost like mashed potato, but it's really, really stiff.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. And then we top that with a little bit of a chakalaka is what we call it, which is just, it's a spicy, almost like a slaw, a spicy slaw with beans and grated carrots and tomato and onion and a lot of chili.
Oh, chakalaka. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, so
do you introduce any of these homegrown foods that you've brought up with into the restaurant itself at One Life?
Well, funny you ask. This weekend, actually, Friday and Saturday, we'll be having an African market. So we've teamed up with the guys from There Goes the There Goes the Neighborhood. And I have come up with a truly African menu, not specifically from South Africa, but a menu that is across the board African. And at this market, you'll be able to avail of all these items that are from Africa and cooked in our kitchen in one life.
Now, we've been talking about food wastage just across the world, and it's really bad generally. I know that you guys have a lot of sustainable efforts. And what are your thoughts on food wastage? How are you working around that at One Life?
I mean, food wastage in general is a killer for restaurants or any food establishment. We try as far as possible to try and keep it down. Mm. At One Life, because we have a rotating, I wouldn't say a rotating salad menu. So every single day we have huge salads that go out, 10 different salads on a daily basis, completely different from the day before and the next day. So you would imagine that generates quite a lot of waste. So what we do after 3 p.m. is we discount that whole counter. Everything that we've produced fresh on that day, we've discounted by 40% just so that we minimize the waste at the end of the day.
So do you have more customers at 3 p.m. on the dot?
Pretty much. There's a line waiting outside at 3 p.m. waiting for the discount to kick in.
No, but I think that's amazing, because I think there has to be some kind of way of saving all this food that's just getting thrown away. I mentioned in another interview before you that I was with my family and we had lots of food left over. So I said, pack it all and I want to take it back. And the young gentleman, he was from Africa somewhere, and he said, I'm so happy that you're all taking it home. So many people just walk out. And he said, we don't even have this enough food in our country, and he couldn't stand seeing the wastage, and it was horrible to hear that.
Absolutely. And I think it's changing now, but when I arrived about almost 10 years ago, the food wastage was a real big problem in Dubai specifically, or what I had experienced at least, that plates would come back to the kitchen and there would just be so much food left over on the plates. Obviously, it's been paid for. It's not really damaging the restaurant, but it's heartbreaking to see all this food that's going to waste, because there's literally nothing you can do with it once it's been plated, other than turn it into compost, which there are really cool initiatives out there. Compost U, I think, is one of them that are collecting waste from restaurants and turning it into compost.
Yeah, and you also you give free filtered water at One Life, right?
Correct. So 5 years running now, we have never charged for a single bottle of water. We have bottled water as an option, but we do have filtered water free of charge on all of our tables in One Life for the last 5 years.
And I understand that saved an estimated 200,000 bottles of water.
Plastic bottles of water, exactly.
That is amazing.
Which is just a drop in the ocean if you think about it, but it's we're doing as much as we can to do our part. And I think our customers realize that and recognize that as well.
So I'm going to give you free but bad advertising right now, if that exists. Okay. So guys, 3 p.m., you get a 40% discount from some of the food, so it doesn't go to waste at One Life. And if you're dehydrated, there's free filtered water.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai i103.8.
We're talking about my favourite subject, which is food, and I am joined by Chef Kelvin Kelly, who's the head chef at One Life Kitchen in the D3 Design District.
The Chef's Table.
So let me ask you, Chef, we're talking about sustainability, how you're doing your best at One Life. I read that you do something to do with avocado seeds. What do you do with them?
Yes, we do. We go through a ton of avocados. Literally, I think I did the calculation a couple of weeks ago, and we do almost half a ton of avocados a month.
Wow.
And that's how many avocados we go through. And we have obviously abundance of these pips and these seeds that are in the center of the avocado. So we looked at what we could be doing with them. And there is a number of things that you can do with them. But one of the things that we thought... And if you come down as promised in 2 weeks, you will pop down.
I will be there. Trust me.
You'll see how much space we have, and greenery is a huge part of our DNA and our philosophy in terms of plants. So what we did was we decided to. I don't know if you've ever seen those school experiments where you put the three toothpicks and an avocado and place it over a glass of water. So that's exactly what we did. So throughout our kitchen, we have a our kitchen's an open kitchen, by the way. So we have a piece of glass that goes halfway up the ceiling. And just on the rim of that, we've kept all the avocado seeds in these cups as they start growing. And once they get to about 15 to 18 centimeters, we then pot them in soil. And then you can find them all around our restaurant, popped around our restaurant.
Oh, that's
cool. We have had, yeah.
So can we do this at home?
Absolutely, you can do it at home. It's super, super simple. The rate of success isn't so high. Like, you need to go through a couple, so don't be despondent if your first one doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. But we found a trick that there's a first layer of skin on the avocado seed. If you just peel that avocado seed and then spike it, and try when spiking the toothpicks, try avoid the natural cracks that are in the avocado, because that's where obviously the avocado will start breaking and the root will start coming down. So try avoid those cracks.
Okay.
Put them in. And we've even given some to customers. Customers have asked for them once they're quite big. We give those to customers as well. So we're doing a lot with avocados.
So I've had three avocados sitting in my kitchen in a bit of a shaded area. They really don't want to be eaten because they are still ripe a week later. What is going on here, Chef?
Honestly, I've 12, 15, almost 15 years in the industry. I still quite haven't figured out. It's like they're aliens. They've got a mind of their own. I do normally at home is I wrap them in a black kitchen towel and I just put them in the back of the cupboard. And sometimes I forget about them, I will admit. And I have a mess in the back of the cupboard. But I try to just put a reminder on my phone, or I've put them there. So every 2 days I check them. And then it turns really quickly.
Maybe I just need to talk to them nicely. But I did once put one of them in my wardrobe with my clothes, because I knew every day I'd open my wardrobe. And it worked. So I don't know. It did work.
Maybe it is. But it's so strange. Like I said, it's got a mind of its own.
Yeah.
It's ripe. And then you look away and it's unripe. It's overripe. It's done. You got to throw it in the dustbin. It's like, a second ago I had it and you were perfect.
They're just playing with us. They're very super intelligent, these avocados.
So
you do something where you burn used coffee grounds.
Correct.
Tell me, this is good for all of us.
This is because we obviously are a cafe in the sense. So we do produce a lot of coffee waste, which we actually roast in-house ourselves too. So we roast our own coffee. As far as possible, we try to produce everything in-house. Obviously, we have limitations and we do source from outside, but our coffee we roast inside. So once the coffee's been ground, you can then put it in a container that doesn't burn, stainless steel container or a tin or something, and just light it with a lighter or something or a match. And just light the top of it. And you won't believe that that smell, it is, I wouldn't say it's a horrendous smell, but it's not really a pleasant smell. Or it's an intense smell, let me say that. It's an intense smell. But this deters flies.
So they don't like caffeine, generally, flies.
Yeah, they don't like caffeine generally. So we have a huge, beautiful outdoor area. And obviously, with being outdoors, you have those pests that are really unwanted and can be annoying. So we just burn coffee on all the tables and it deters them.
Okay, that's a really good tip. So the avocado seeds, I'm going to come around and see how you make that and steal a few of those. Maybe I'll swap my unripe ones with yours, ripe ones, and you'll never know. Let's see what happens.
You know what we're starting in the week coming is because we obviously generate a lot of these seeds or have a lot of these seeds, and we're not we can't obviously plant all of them. We just don't have the space.
Yeah.
Is we are having a bowl at our counter and you can just walk up and pick one out of there and take it home and plant it yourself.
Okay. So
we'll be giving away the avocado seeds for you as well. So you don't have to wait for the avocado to be ripe and then miss it. You can just come to us and we'll give you an avocado seed tree to plant.
And you also use the water left over from strained yogurt as a protein shake. I actually, growing up being Indian, I still can make my own homemade yogurt.
Yeah, right. It's super simple.
So simple.
It's super simple, and the nutritional value is so much better. And you know what's going inside of it. You know what you're putting in it.
What is the nutritional value in that water?
I wouldn't know exactly, and if I told you, I'd probably be lying, but I do know that it's high. It's high in protein.
It is. Okay.
It's whey. They call it whey protein. Okay. So it's really high in protein, but I wouldn't, if I gave you an answer, I'd probably
No, I think I eat plain yogurt every day. I absolutely love it. So finally, at 3 o'clock, we have a dream analysis coming on, a dream expert. Do you want me to ask her anything? Have you had a weird dream that you want to know what it means? You know, you've been flying, your teeth have fallen out, anything? Do you dream about your avocados?
I've actually had the weirdest dreams. I tend not to have dreams, but when I do have them, they're really, really weird. And I've always wondered what they thought about, but then I'm afraid of the answer.
I
never actually turn out, do any research in it.
Ah, you're such a wuss, Chef. All right, Chef, it has been a pleasure. And when I come down in the next 2 weeks, I want you to talk to me in that lovely Italian fake accent, yeah?
Absolutely, Poonam. Thank you so much for your time.
Ciao, Bella.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
Now, if anyone wants to give me a hug, I'm always open to a hug. Zina, I'm just letting you know I haven't had a hug for a while from you.
I'll give you one later.
Yeah, you better. Anyway, so if you want to give me a hug, we're talking hugs. We're talking about being tactile, missing that human connection, especially during the pandemic. You can text us. Tell me, do you miss hugging? Do you still do it? How many hugs a day do you usually get? Who's your favorite person to hug? Now, the reason I'm saying this is because one in four British people haven't had a hug in a year. And I can vouch for that because that includes my mom. Now, it's not that she's not around my nieces or my nephews or anything, but because of the pandemic, they're too scared to get too close to her. And it has been 1 year since she got a hug and she took a picture with my auntie when she had a hug. And it's, can you imagine that, not having a hug for 12 months? Now, today I'm going to talk about what happens to us when we don't have that human connection. I have with me right now Dr. Kieran Hillier to find out why human touch is necessary for us all. She's an assistant professor of psychology at Heriot Watt University. She's also a psychologist at Open Mind Psychiatry Counseling and Neuroscience Center in Barsha Heights. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kieran.
Thank you, Poonam, so much for having me.
That was a long introduction. You've got a lot of qualifications there. I'm out of breath.
So, I keep busy, yes.
No, I'm glad you keep busy. So tell me, why are hugs so important for humans?
Yeah, I mean, hugs or any type of physical touch are really important. I mean, humans are a social species, so we function much better when we live in packs compared to when living alone. And touch can be a very quick indicator that someone is accepting of us and cares for us. So Gary Chapman, in his book, The Five Love Languages, talks about physical touch as a core way for us to both express our affection for someone, whether that affection is romantic or familial or platonic. Mm. And it's also a core way for us to receive those expressions of affection from other people. And it's particularly important for children and their physiological, mental, and emotional development. Now, so there's lots of research on that.
Yeah, we're gonna go through all these benefits. Let me just break this down, because I've heard this a lot, so I want you to verify this. So I heard that we need 4 hugs a day for survival, 8 hugs a day for maintenance, and 12 hugs a day for growth. How true is that?
So that's an interesting piece of data that came from a family therapist in the US, I believe. I'm not actually familiar with kind of where Virginia Satir, where she got, made that conclusion from. But there's certainly also, there's a lot of cultural variation about how much physical contact people actually desire, as well as the type of context and the location on the body and the type of touch that they feel comfortable with. But having said that, I would say too many hugs is probably better than not enough hugs. So if in doubt, hug it out.
I love that. Well, I'm a very, very tactile person, and I would be happy to hug somebody or, you know, pinch them on the arm or something rather than just do a shake their hand. That's just who I am as a person. And it's interesting because I did work for a company before, and before the pandemic, This was an amazing thing that we did. The CEO made all of us stand in a circle, and we used to call it the huddle. And what would happen, every day, there was about 10 to 15 of us, so we were getting 12 regular hugs every morning. We'd start our day saying, you know, what are you grateful for? What are you focusing on? Do you have any challenges? And then every single one of us would hug the other person, and we would start our day like that, and we would always be laughing.
Oh, that's amazing. That sounds like such a wonderful, positive way to start a work day. I need to get in touch
with
your boss.
That's, yes, you should. But that's now stopped because of COVID. So first of all, let's talk about the benefits. Let's break it down health-wise. What does it actually do? And it's not just hugging. It's just having that tactile touch, holding somebody's hands.
Sure, yeah. So certainly touch of any type is very beneficial for both our physical and our mental health. So let's talk about physical benefits first.
Okay.
So there's plenty of research showing that active, like gentle physical touch can help to activate the immune system. So people who do have that more physical contact are less likely to get sick. It's also been shown to reduce people's heart rate and blood pressure, as well as reducing people's experiences of either acute pain or chronic pain. So that's physically, and then mentally, just hugging and having that physical touch makes us feel good. It stimulates the release of serotonin, which is a natural antidepressant, as well as dopamine, which is associated with having feelings of pleasure, but also associated with remembering those feelings so you know to actively seek out to do that same behavior later on.
Right. Now, is there a particular length of time, a minimum length of time, we should hug someone to really get that feel-good factor?
That's a good question. So the research is a bit fuzzy on this, but from what I've read, a hug should be a minimum length of 6 seconds. If your goal is to activate all of these associated physiological and emotional consequences of having that physical contact. There is some research that says 20 seconds. I think if we aim for 6, and then it always comes down to whether you feel personally comfortable with the length of the hug as well. And we don't want people like standing there going 1, 2, 3.
Maybe it depends how cute the person is you're hugging, okay?
True.
So I've just got a great text from Sonia. She heard what I said about my ex-company where we'd all hug each other. And I kind of understand what she's saying. She said, I would cringe at the idea of starting my work days like that with the people I currently work with. I can understand that because, you know, we're very close in the company I used to work for. So we're like brother and sister. So it was not going to work for everybody, I'm assuming.
Yeah, definitely. Like I mentioned, there's cultural differences in terms of what people are comfortable with. And there's also a lot of individual differences. And so that's why we've seen a lot of variation in some people have coped with these restrictions that COVID has inflicted on us quite well because they don't need that physical contact so much. And other people have really struggled with that. So I think what we are going to see as we move back into working in the office and resuming all of these different activities will be I'm starting to see posts around people wearing different bracelets or pins to kind of indicate the level of contact that they feel comfortable with. So red might mean please keep your distance. Orange might mean I'm comfortable with a handshake or a quick hug. And green might mean come on in, like I'm open for anything. So I imagine your former workplace would have a whole lot of green in that scenario. But it is, you know, in regards to the benefits of physical touch, there's a lot of benefits, but it's also about what you are personally comfortable with.
I would be bright for fluorescent green.
Fluorescent green. Glowing green.
That's how open I am to hugs.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're talking hugging and cuddling. Milani's leaving the studio without giving me a hug. Bye, Milani. No one's hugging me right now. Okay, so if you want to talk about, we're talking about hugging and the importance of it, especially during the pandemic. People aren't having that human connection. If you want to text me, tell me who's your favorite person to hug. Tell me if you are not hugging anymore and you really do miss it. We're talking with Dr. Kieran Hillier. She is an assistant professor of psychology at Heriot Watt University in Dubai. Now, Dr. Kieran, I think some of the best people to hug are kids. What do you think about that?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Kids love hugging. And it's an important part of them feeling attached and feeling safe and secure with the people who are around them. So it's, it's a very non-verbal way of expressing that we care for each other. And that is a way that they can communicate their affection to us. So kids are great huggers.
Yeah. And I have had a lovely text from Mona. We tried to get her on the radio, but she's too shy. And she says, I love to hug my grandchildren. And I tell them we need to hug for at least 20 seconds to feel happy. I think that's more for her than the kids, because kids can wiggle out of a hug. They're like, no.
And maybe it's grandmothers. I remember my grandmother was an amazing hugger. That was how she wouldn't kiss you on the cheek or anything. It was always she'd come out of her house with her arms wide open and just wait for this hug that would just envelope you. It was wonderful.
Yeah, no, there's nothing like a grandmother and grandfather hug. So let me ask you, when COVID hit, you know, even when I was around certain friends, we'd keep a distance, but my friend had two dogs. And I honestly would start hugging them because I missed hugging humans. Do we get the same effect from our pets?
Yes, for sure. So any type of physical touch is great. We're particularly drawn to soft, gentle forms of touch. And so getting that from a dog or a cat with its soft fur and everything is really appealing. And research shows that hugging or having that physical touch with a pet is we get the same benefits as that compared to a person, because both of them release oxytocin. So that's called the love hormone or the bonding hormone. And when that gets released, it facilitates building trust and cooperation and bonding with the other individual, whether it's a person or whether it's a pet.
So if there are people out there who are not, you know, they're not even getting a hug a day. I mean, I look back at some of my family members. They've been in lockdown 3 times yet, and it has affected them. What do you recommend people do if they're not around someone they can just have that feel-good hug from?
Yeah, you're right. If we don't get that physical touch, it can result in what can be called touch deprivation or touch starvation, to the point where people can feel so starved for having that physical contact, they will make an appointment with the doctor, even if they don't have any particular organic difficulties or diseases, just so they can have that physical examination done.
Wow.
Which is very, that shows how desperate people are in order to have that connection. But let's say, you know, you want to have some quick outlets for you when you're at home. And if you have someone else in the house or who is in your bubble, then that's always great. But if you don't, there's still a lot of other ways to get that form of touch. So some examples can be different types of self-massage. So whether that is bringing your foot up on the couch and massaging your foot or your face or your hand, those can be really nice. And the idea is it's nice, slow movements. So some research suggests that if you are going to do that gentle touch, you're aiming for covering around a centimetre of surface in about 3 centimeters for every second. So it's being mindful about that. It's going to be nice and gentle for yourself. Other people might use a weighted blanket.
Okay.
So having that pressure on your body can feel really safe and secure and really pleasant for people. Other people, it can be about interacting with plants. So we've talked about pets, but also plants, just having that tactile interaction by caring for the plant and watering it. There's also the positive benefits of any nice fragrances that those plants release. So that can be a really nice outlet. Or even virtual hugging. So I could give you a virtual hug, Poonam, where we either if you have someone around you, but then you say, okay, let's give each other a hug, and then you just sort of hug yourself or you're hugging another person in your bubble whilst the other person on the line or in the call is hugging as well. And so you're still getting that visual connection between this physical experience that you have. So these virtual hugs can be really nice. Or the other one would be a hug surrogate. So you might post a item that you own or that you've made, such as a teddy bear or a little fabric charm, something physical and homemade that your partner or your family member could, when you finish talking with them, that they could be hugging that physically instead. Mm. If it's scented with your perfume or an aftershave or something, that can also be really nice.
Okay, well, right now we're on Facebook Live, so let's both give each other a virtual hug over Facebook Live.
Virtual hug.
There you go, hug. It has been, that was a nice hug. That's the first one I've had all day. Zina and Melania not giving me anything today.
I'm happy to oblige.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kiran, and we'll speak to you soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show, Poonam Verma with you. Now, for the next half an hour, we're going to be talking about veganism. Now, let me break this down. Vegan's very common right now, but it was actually coined in 1944, the actual term, by a small group of vegetarians who broke away from the Leicester Vegetarian Society in the UK to form the Vegan Society. They chose not to consume dairy, eggs, or any other products of animal origin, and to refrain from meat, just like vegetarians. The term vegan, which I didn't know about, was chosen by combining the first and last letters of the word vegetarian. Joining me now is Carly Dubry. She has launched a brand of vegan handbags, and she's organized a pop-up market called Not Just for Vegans. Welcome, Carly. How are you?
I'm very well, very excited. Thank you for getting in touch.
I love the name Not Just for Vegans. Where did this name come up for? Because I'm sitting there going, what does that mean, Not Just for Vegans?
Well, weirdly enough, I actually bought this domain name 3 years ago when I just have, the way I am is that I don't feel like vegan choices are just for vegans. They're for everyone, so it doesn't have to be just for us. You know, there's so many lovely products and great foods out there, especially now. So I really wanted to feed that concept out into not the vegan world, but, you know, for everyone, because everyone can make a difference.
Okay. So tell me, when does this pop-up take place, and is it brand new? Have you just started it?
Yeah, so basically it started because my brand is Not Just for Vegans, and this is the Not Just Vegans market, which has kind of evolved from a community network that I run called Vegans Entrepreneurs Middle East.
Yeah.
So I created a network for like-minded businesses who sell vegan products to get together and network and have some decent content to feed to them. So that kind of naturally evolved in the market. And yes, it will be taking place on Friday, which is tomorrow. And it starts at 12 and goes on till 8. And there will also be some workshops as well. So the perfumery that will be allowing you to curate your own scent as well. Because perfume is a difficult one usually for vegans, because most products still test on animals.
Yeah, no, I was talking yesterday to a makeup artist and I said I refuse to wear any makeup that's not vegan or animal free or cruelty, you know, because I don't think we need to do this anymore. So I'm assuming you were never a vegan to start with when you were born, right?
No, not at all.
So where did that shift come? How did it start?
I think I've always been someone who has a lot of vegan or vegetarian meals, and I changed over 7 years ago. I found that maybe the quality of meats over here wasn't particularly great, so I just didn't enjoy it. But I think the biggest thing was when I got my dog, and it was just a case of what makes her different from any other pet or animal. So that triggered something for me, and I just did it overnight, literally.
Wow.
Just said to my mum, that's it. And but the food part was the easy part.
Yeah, you know, you're right. My friend, she saw a documentary, came back, and literally overnight she became a vegan. And to this day, 2 years later, she still is. And I used to eat a lot of food with her. And being Indian, we have a lot of vegetarian food, so it's not a massive issue. We can make a lot of dishes. But I noticed I've had dairy milk, cow's milk, all my life. And I recently swapped to almond milk. Now, I can't even smell cow's milk. Isn't that bizarre?
No, I completely get that, because I was the same. I think in the first 2 weeks of turning vegan, my taste changed, because apparently there's a film that goes across your tongue from having dairy all the time. So it does change your taste buds a little bit and make them more sensitive once that film's gone away.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I felt like I was standing next to a cow this morning when I had this milk in my tea, and I'm like, I've grown up with this. What is wrong with me? So that does, you become more sensitive to it, I suppose, like you're saying.
well, you're transitioning into that should be the normal.
Yes.
We should only have milk from our mothers. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. What do you think about this whole vegan life? Do you think a lot of people are just making it a bit of a fad? Or do you think, I mean, what do you think about it? Because it's kind of like yoga. Remember, yoga, the true form of what yoga was, has been transformed into a business and a fashion kind of, you know, trend. So what do you think about veganism now?
You know, I don't see it as a fad. I think the thing is the awareness, and it's not just about the animals and the food. It's about, you know, the other impacts we have on the planet of, like, deforestation to make crops to feed the animals, and then those animals feed us. So we're kind of putting something else in the middle that doesn't need to happen. I think people are having this awareness not about the animals, but again, the planet. People want to have a more positive impact on the planet, and they can make a choice two or three times a week to maybe have a vegan meal, because there are so many good vegan meals out there. So, like I said, we can all make a difference. They don't have to go fully vegan, just, you know, make some slightly different decisions maybe.
So how, what kind of changes have you noticed since you became a vegan, and how do you feel in yourself?
I'm happier. I think I'm more aligned to my, you know, I always used to say I love animals. Well, now I feel like, okay, I live to that standard of truly loving animals. So I just feel happier. I'll be honest, most people feel healthier by doing it. I didn't feel any difference for that. I've always eaten pretty healthy anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's just that contentment in myself.
So do you try and be vegan in every capacity, like whether it's, you know, makeup, products you buy, shoes you buy?
Yeah, everything. So that was the harder part. And that, and, you know, people should, if they want to change into having vegan products or becoming a vegan, if they want to fall into a label, which I don't think labeling matters, it can be a gradual process. So when I gave up food, I still had my leather handbags for some time until my bag needed replacing. And then I would replace with a vegan bag, which is like my cork leather bags that I've got, and then skincare as and when I needed it. So it can be phased, and I think Google is your savior. So if there's any food that you're missing, then just Google in what that your favorite food, whether it be pancakes or something like that, and there's always a vegan version of something.
And do you think Dubai is getting better with the options that we have for veganism?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, in the last 6 months alone, with building the community, there are vegan businesses, really, like, new business popping up all the time, which is amazing to see.
Yeah, they are.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So we're talking veganism. The vegan community is growing around the world, and it's evident here in the UAE. And vegans are speaking out through their spending power. As a result, more shops are selling vegan items. More F&B outlets have vegan menus. And one lady who is with us, she's been taking steps to spread the word and make vegan products more available to the public. Her name's Carly Dubry. She's with us right now. Now, Carly, we have a few questions for you. Are you ready?
I think so.
Here we go. Let's hear from the first person.
So what about plants? Don't they have feelings too?
What about plants? Don't they have feelings too? She's asking.
I always find that this is a funny one because it's usually done by a meat eater. And it's usually just a deflection on what their consumer habits are, because I don't ask them those sort of questions about it. So, yeah, I love that question, because it's usually it's about that other person. It's not about me and what I'm doing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's it. You're so right. Actually, she's probably a meat eater. That makes so much sense. Okay, we've got another question.
I really want to know why everything that's vegan is just so expensive. Makes no sense.
She's asking, why is everything that's vegan so expensive?
Well, it depends on where you're shopping, but vegan items shouldn't be more expensive. In fact, you should make a bit of a reduction if you're buying things like tempeh or tofu, lentils, peanuts. There's so many different ways of doing it. I think maybe the items that are more expensive I can relate to is sometimes some of the vegan cheeses are in the supermarkets. And also the mock meat, sometimes they can be quite expensive. And that's quite often because they're imported in.
Yeah, I do also think, you know, sometimes I've been to one or two vegan restaurants and they are quite expensive as well. And you kind of think, really, do they need to be this expensive? But I suppose it's a restaurant, isn't it? They got overhead. So I kind of put it down to that, I suppose.
Maybe they have less cost. I have no idea. I couldn't even answer that question.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I do feel that the restaurants have been a lot more reasonable out here with the vegan options.
Yeah. Now, I do have a question, and I guarantee you this is going to be from a meat eater because I know what the question is. Okay, let's have a listen.
Are beans all you have for protein? You must be sick of them.
Are beans all you have for protein? You must be sick of them. Is that all you have for protein? Beans, Carly?
It's not, though, although it is one of my favourites. So there are so many different items you can get your protein from. So, I mean, even a large jacket potato, that's got something like 8 grams of protein in it. Even kale, that's around 100 grams, got about 4 grams in there. But things like lentils, tofu, nuts, chia seeds, edamame, there are so many different items.
And do you cook a lot at home yourself?
If I've got company, yes. I don't like cooking on my own too much. I'm a bit of a lazy vegan, so I order in quite a lot.
That should be the name of your Instagram page, Lazy Vegan. Okay, so we've got another clip. I think this is a funny one. I'm sure it is. Let's have a listen.
Can vegans and meat eaters be friends, even lovers?
That's a good one. So can vegans and meat eaters be friends and even lovers? Now, I really like that question because my friend who is a vegan, she said to me, I don't think I could ever go out on a date with a meat eater because I just couldn't, there wouldn't be anything for me on the menu. This was a few years ago when there wasn't a lot of vegan restaurants. So what do you think? Could a non-vegan and a vegan have a great marriage?
I guess that just seems to depend on the individual. I mean, myself, yes. Absolutely. I'm fine and comfortable with someone else's decision. It depends on the individual. But yes, it's all about the love.
It's all about the love. Okay. So tell me about your handbags. Tell me about these vegan handbags because my sister's really into them and I'm really into the vegan makeup. So how did you start that and where can we find them? Will they be at the pop-up?
They will be at the pop-up. So I've got a website which is notjustforvegans.com and it's part of the boutique range that I've got. So these bags are made from cork, which is one of my favourite materials.
Because I've heard it's so flexible, isn't it?
Yeah, it wears and a bit like a leather does. But the best thing is how sustainable it is because cork is harvested from a cork tree. It's just the bark that's harvested every 9 years. So you don't even chop any of the trees down at all. So it's truly a sustainable material to have.
Yeah, I've heard they make a lot of shoes as well. There's a lot of brands there that make shoes with cork and it's supposed to be very sustainable.
It is, yeah, it's great.
Okay, that's amazing. So I wish you all the best with your pop-up. Where can people follow you on Instagram? We saw the website. You've mentioned the website. Where can we follow you on Instagram if they want to pop over, literally?
So we've got an individual market one, which is just not just for vegans market, which is we're showing all the vendors that are on there. So if they look on the page, look on the stories, and that they'll be able to suss out because we've got so many different products covering the full range. So it's not just food, it's skincare, it's haircare, homeware, clothes, accessories, you name it, it will be there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Carly.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Carly Dubry is running the Not Just for Vegans pop-up market at Thrift for Good on the Palm.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Join Helen Farmer every weekday from 2 to 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.